This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
We have a live show coming up on May 13th at 6 p.m. Pacific.
Guess what? It's online. Register through the link in the show notes or find information on the Reddit or bit.ly/spilledmilklive21.
We are going to be doing a lightning round, which means Matthew and I will not know ahead of time what the topics are. Abby's going to pull them out of a hat. And so we need your help. Please submit topic ideas for our lightning round.
Send them to topics@spilledmilkpodcast.com.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and sit in our closets.
Yeah, except I'm in the dining room, like at the usual Spilled Milk recording table today, and it feels so weird to be alone at the table.
What made you decide to do that?
Because we have a guest today, and I think we're going to be on camera, and I didn't want to be sort of like leaning off the edge of my bed in front of the guest.
You left me here alone in my closet.
I left you there alone in the closet. No, but your closet is like, you know, it's got kind of a real vibe to it.
Yeah.
Whereas
really closety.
Like one time I like used our usual recording spot for a work meeting and someone said, "Are you in a hotel room?" And I was like, "I need to find a new spot."
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, anyway, today's episode is Korean rice cakes, or deok.
Yes. And we're going to be talking a little about deok in general and a lot about deokbokki, which is one of the most common and most delicious dishes made with them.
Yes. This is the third episode in our rice cakes trilogy.
Yes. Which, does it have to remain a trilogy or could it be like one of those like fantasy or romance trilogies that ends up having like 19 books?
I think these are books,
by the way.
I think it could be like that. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there are lots of other rice cakes. I was starting to say something and then I didn't know what I was going to say.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, like, you could probably make, like, rice pudding into a cake. I was watching Great British Bake Off, which is, like, all I watch anymore, and someone made a really ill-conceived dessert where they used, like, rice pudding as a sauce or, like, a garnish on top of a cake. And we're like, that can't be good.
Wow.
And guess what? It wasn't.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, anyway, today's episode is Korean rice cakes, and we have a special guest today.
We're very excited.
We're both pretty excited. Kind of nervous.
I've moved from my usual recording spot, which is sort of like leaning over the edge of my bed toward the microphone, to the old-fashioned dining room table Spilled Milk studio. It's so lonely.
I am really happy to report. So, you know, my bathrobe hangs here in the background of my closet. View.
Oh, that's the bathrobe you were wearing last week.
Yeah, this is my bathrobe. Yeah. And, you know, it's freshly washed. So I feel like I really showed up here for our special guest today. Washed my bathrobe.
You really did. Yes. I can see it gleams. Did you use a dryer sheet?
I don't think so. We did use borax. We had borax every load.
20 mule team?
Yeah, 20 mule team.
Is there another brand of borax? That's a really good brand name. I feel like I don't know what it has to do with borax, but it's very easy to remember.
You know, I have been seeing a whole bunch of graffiti around Seattle, the word borax. And I'm like, yeah, nice. Yeah, man, I feel you.
That's right. Finally, like a youthful street artist who really gets me.
Yeah. They totally get my laundry booster. Anyway, today we are talking about duck, and I'm really excited because I just ate these for the first time a few weeks ago. And
okay, I want to hear all about that.
Yeah, so I'm really excited.
Okay, so does that mean we're on memory lane? Oh, we should tell people about our live show first.
Oh, great. Okay.
It's going to be online. It's May 13th at 6 p.m. You can register through the link in the show notes or go to bit.ly/spilledmilklive21.
Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. We are going to be doing this show as a lightning round. So that means that you, listener so-and-so, can...
you, listener so-and-so.
You can send in a topic suggestion. You can send it to topics@spilledmilkpodcast.com. And producer Abby, while we're doing the live show, is going to be pulling topics like out of a hat. And Matthew and I have to do like a lightning round on that topic.
I can't wait to see this hat. I don't even know if Abby's going to be on camera or not, but I feel like she should while she's pulling things out of a hat.
Probably. We're going to be coming to you live from our closets, as we do now.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is going to be on Zoom, and it's free, although donations are encouraged. You can learn more when you go to bit.ly/spilledmilklive21.
All right. So should we go down Korean rice cake memory lane?
Yes. Let me take you down my memory lane.
Please.
It begins about a month ago.
March 2021.
March 2021, when we decided that we were going to do this episode, which was prompted by puffed products or puffed snacks.
We started with puffed products.
Okay.
Wow, then sprayed as I said that word with all the P's in it. Then we said like we should do rice cakes because those were like the puffed elephant in the room that mm-hmm. we didn't talk about on puffed products.
Mm-hmm.
What are puffed products? I've already forgotten. It was like pop chips, right?
Yeah. Well, it's really weird how we have really drifted downstream here. We started out with like puffed products, which was mostly corn, right? And then we did rice cakes, which is the technology actually that enabled puffed products to happen.
Right.
And right?
Then this week we're doing unpuffed rice cakes.
Correct. And specifically Korean rice cakes.
Yes. All right.
Yeah. There we go. So anyway.
Where is this river going to take us next? Probably over a waterfall in a barrel.
Once we had decided to do this episode, I thought, okay, so Matthew suggested Korean rice cakes. That means I should try Korean rice cakes. I will be perfectly honest and say I'd never had them.
All right.
And anyway, so Ash and I got dinner one night, delivery from Korean Tofu House. Is that what it's called here in Seattle? Yeah. Korean Tofu House. We got a couple of different things, bibimbap, and we also got dokbokki, which is a really... Oh my God, it is a stew with kimchi, often with like a fish base, right?
Yeah.
We're going to talk more about this, but with these like cylindrical Korean rice cakes in there. They almost look like penne, but that are not hollow, right? And the texture is incredible. And they're so good next, like in this really flavorful, like pungent soup because they are like all texture.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about this, but there's like a soupier version. I mean, there are a ton of different versions of this dish, but there's like a soupier version and a drier version that are both super common, made with gochujang and fish cakes usually. Like it can have added meat. We'll get there.
Okay, cool. Okay, what about you, Matthew? Where's your memory lane?
I was trying to remember, and this is one of those instances where like I stepped out onto memory lane or like the memory lane of my mind palace, and I immediately got lost in a fog because I think it was relatively recently for me too, like probably like the early to mid 2000s that I first encountered these, but I don't remember where. It would have been at a Korean restaurant in Seattle in the 2000s, I'm almost sure.
Mm-hmm.
and probably in the form of tteokbokki.
Okay.
And like immediately, like I loved the texture right away. I think this is a super textural food.
I was trying to think of how to describe the texture. It's like, you know, it's got some of that wonderful like springy chew that mochi does.
Yes. I think like if you have had mochi but haven't had Korean rice cakes, it's based on the same process. So like there isn't any difference like in terms of the product between like what's called mochi in Japanese cooking and what's called ddeok in Korean cooking. It's okay. Just, you know, how they're used.
Okay. Well, I was really surprised by the shape of them.
Yeah.
I think somehow I pictured that it would be like a disc, like a thin disc. But instead,
and that's also common, but not usually in tteokbokki, but okay. That's the other shape.
Okay. Okay, cool. Well, let's dive into this. Let's talk about before we're joined by our guest.
Yeah. Who could be popping in anytime.
Let's talk about like what these are and how they're made.
All right. So there is a wide variety of different Korean rice cakes called ddeok, and they can be made with different types of rice. They can be made with added grains or flavoring. But by far the most common in Korean cooking today are the ones made with steamed sticky rice, short grain sticky rice that's then pounded and turned into a paste and extruded. And they certainly can be made at home, but are mostly industrially made and purchased. And when you buy them, they are really fun to work with because they're usually in like kind of a vacuum packed bag. Mm-hmm. There are two common shapes. There's the cylindrical ones that you had, and then there's the slices, which are kind of like a third of an inch thick and maybe like a little over an inch long oval slices. Yes.
I'm raising my hand. I have a question, Matthew.
Yes. So go ahead.
You say they come in vacuum-packed packages. Is it kind of like if you buy like fresh gnocchi at the grocery store or something? Do they come in like the refrigerated section?
Yes, refrigerated or frozen. They're quite perishable. Like once you, like the first time I got them, I think like I opened them up. And the thing is, they seem almost like plastic when you take them out of the package. And then as soon as they get warmed up, then they soften and they become like chewy and delicious. But you take them out of the package at first. And it's like, you know, like a piece of chalk, sort of. But so I assumed because they are so firm and like just kind of this white stick that they would be very durable in the fridge. They are not. So once you open the bag, they will get moldy real quick because rice is delicious and all sorts of people and animals and microorganisms love to eat it.
Perfect. Okay. So they come in kind of this, this like pinky finger shape and size.
They're kind of like, they're cut by machine, but they are cut into like varying lengths, which is kind of adorable. And they're sort of like, you know, I think of them as being like gnocchi. I'm glad you mentioned gnocchi because they are, you know, a textural element. They're not something that has a lot of flavor in and of themselves, but they are great for carrying flavor, for adding texture, and for adding bulk to a soup, or like, you know, taking a sauce that you want to eat a ton of and turning that into a meal. You know, they are like a pasta.
Yes, this makes a lot of sense. So what is tteokbokki then?
Tteokbokki,
the dish we're going to be focusing on.
Yeah, it is the most common dish made with rice cakes, and particularly the cylindrical rice cakes in Korea today. And it is enormously popular. And I had assumed until I started researching this show, I knew that rice cakes in East Asia go back millennia. And so I assumed tteokbokki probably went back at least to like when chilies first arrived in East Asia. No, it's from the 50s.
Really?
Yeah. So it is a post-war food. It was first made and sold in a particular neighborhood in Seoul. And there is like if you look around, there is an apocryphal origin story that goes along with it. Everyone seems to agree that it was first served at a restaurant run by a woman named Ma Bok Lim. It, according to Wikipedia, quote, when Ma Bok Lim participated in the opening of a Chinese restaurant, she dropped ddeok into hot sauce accidentally and ate it and found that it was delicious. Like,
whoops.
Of all the fake origin stories of food, this was like one of the dumbest. Because
this one,
like,
seems like it really needs to be like it's very thin. Like they need to elaborate on it. Like we need more.
Like, we've talked about this before, I know, but, like, the thread running through all of these, like, whoopsie origin stories is, like, you know, women sure are dumb. You know, they're in the kitchen just, like, dropping stuff all the time. And, whoa, like, that tasted good.
The Toll House origin story is the same kind of thing, right? Like, oh, my hand just slipped and I threw some chocolate chips in.
Yeah, and especially, like, when it involves, like, something, like, getting crisped in a pan, like pot stickers or you know, like, something with hot sauce. Like, you know, who could have guessed that, like, you know, crisping something up in a pan or putting hot sauce on something would be delicious? No, it had to be a mistake.
So how is the dish made, like, you know, often? I know there are lots of different ways of making tteokbokki, but what's a typical way of making it these days?
Okay, so it's usually made with a stock that's based on dried anchovies and kelp, gochujang, which is Korean fermented hot sauce, fish cakes. Did it have fish cakes in it?
It did have fish cakes in it, yeah.
And it's usually like a thinly sliced, kind of like sheet-shaped fish cake?
Yes, yes. I wasn't sure what it was, actually, but yeah, I'm glad that you've now explained it.
Yeah, it adds like another textural element, because that's more of like a, you know, What's a nice way to say spongy? You know, it's kind of like a juicy texture compared to like the super chewy texture of the rice cakes.
Yes,
and usually scallions or onions.
Scallions, yeah. Yes, big time. And you know, and it's got this, the broth is quite thick. I mean, it's really like there. It is undeniably just like laced with gochujang.
Yes.
Like so much.
Yeah. And it can be like sometimes it's cooked down so that it gets really dry and like, you know, is the sauce is really just clinging to the rice cakes. And sometimes it's more saucy.
Yeah. Mine was definitely more saucy. Wait, what did you write here? What are some other variations?
Oh, yeah. These? So there is there's a neighborhood in Seoul, the neighborhood in Seoul where it originated, the Sindang neighborhood. There is now a tteokbokki town with dozens of restaurants serving it in hundreds of variations. And some of those variations have become hugely popular. Like one that became popular in the last, I was going to say few years, but probably like couple decades now is rose tteokbokki, which is made with gochujang and cream.
Rose as in like pink.
Yes.
The way a penne alla vodka is kind of a pink sauce.
That's what made me thought. I'd never heard of this and now I'm dying to try it.
Oh my God. Wait a minute. You said curry tteokbokki?
Yeah. So there's
that sounds great.
Curry tteokbokki. There's cream sauce based, so like carbonara or Alfredo style. There's non-spicy soy sauce base that often has meat in it. There's tteokbokki, which is tteokbokki with added ramen noodles. You still have the rice cakes, but also noodles.
That was an option when I ordered it from Korean Tofu House. Yeah, you could add ramen.
And there's gungjung tteokbokki, which is royal court style, made with soy sauce, beef, and a lot of vegetables, which looks really good. I don't think I've ever had one other than like the most common, like one that would be made in Korean home kitchens with gochujang and stock and scallions and fish cakes.
I was pleasantly surprised by how well the tteok held up as a takeout dish.
Yes.
Like, the noodles, they hold up texturally much, much better than I thought they would.
Yeah.
So that even by the time this thing arrived at my house in the dead of winter, you know, and I live at, you know, at the end of a 2 mile long unpaved road through the woods and here.
Wait, is that Memory Lane?
DoorDash comes on horseback.
Yes, yes, yes.
Anyway, it was fantastic. I imagine also that it probably would be pretty good the next day, right?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think I have reheated it the next day. And it's become like an enormously popular takeout and delivery item in Korea today.
Cool.
Michelle Zauner is a writer, singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist who was born in Seoul and grew up in Eugene, Oregon. She records and performs as Japanese Breakfast. Her debut memoir, Crying in H Mart, is out this week, and her third Japanese Breakfast album, Jubilee, drops in June. Michelle, welcome to Spilled Milk.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to hear someone say Oregon in a not weird way.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We all know who grew up in Oregon that it really is called Oregon, but we just say Oregon to annoy people.
Well, so when this episode airs, your book will have come out 2 days before. So, you've got this book coming out. You've got a new album dropping in June, right?
Yes, on the 4th.
Will you tell us a little bit about each of them?
Yeah, so my book is called Crying in HMAR, and it's about how I really turned to HMAR, which is like a Korean grocery chain, as a kind of place of refuge and, you know, like a place where I bought my groceries to go on this kind of like healing journey of cooking Korean food. I'm half Korean, and after my mom passed away of a really aggressive GI cancer, I sort of found myself like having this new anxiety about my like racial identity. And I just kind of naturally found myself, for a variety of reasons, turning to Korean food to kind of like uncover some memories of my mother that were kind of buried in this trauma of caretaking. And I also feel like I turned to it as a way to kind of preserve this cultural identity that felt sort of like at risk in this new way. Mm-hmm. And then my album is called Jubilee, and it comes out on June 4th. It's my third album under the moniker Japanese Breakfast. And my first two records were also largely about grief. And so I think I just felt like after I wrote these two records and the whole book about the grieving process and, you know, suffering, I wanted to like,
yeah,
sort of like fling myself to the other end of the spectrum and write about this other part of my life. And, you know, I think it was also like indie musicians in particular maybe like are often like mining tragedy in a natural way, but we're sort of like expected to like dwell in our depression. And I love the idea of like sort of challenging myself to write an album about joy. So this new record is about joy. And yeah, I feel like it's a very ambitious and theatrical record, and the arrangements are some of the largest that we've done in a long time. And yeah, the theme is joy.
Yeah, the single Be Sweet has been like on repeat, like in my house and like, you know, living rent free in my head since it came out, and like reminds me so much of like songs that I loved growing up in the 80s.
Thank you. I love to hear that.
And yeah, the video is super fun. That must have, yes, been really fun to make.
It was very fun to make. A lot of rolling around on the ground.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
So are you doing a book tour from your home? And,
yeah,
and if so, how can people find out where to see you?
Yeah, I guess by the time this comes out, we have like a little flyer that we can send you to, but I'm doing a virtual tour and I'm really excited because, yeah, like, you know, I mean, it's not ideal, but like it's still really fun. We've got like a lot of really great guests. Meng Chi is going to be on one, and Bowen Yang is going to be on one.
Oh,
and
that's so great.
Karen Chi is doing one. So I'm really, really excited about the lineup of people I get to talk to and forced to talk about my book with.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, congratulations.
And I'm really excited because I get to do something with Powell's.
Oh,
Powell's, yes.
Powell's is the greatest. Powell's is this huge, huge bookstore in Portland that that I grew up going to all the time, and is one of the best places in the world.
I feel like the best thing about doing an event at Powell's is they, you know, if you're lucky, they put your name on the marquee, and I hope they still put your name on the marquee.
Oh, yeah.
That would be sick. I hope that eventually, like, things will open up enough for us to, like, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a belated book tour that could happen in person, but I'm not sure how this works. I've never written a, yeah, book before, but I would love to do something in an actual Powell's someday. But for now, virtual is very cool.
Yeah. Maybe for the paperback.
Yeah.
Well, should we talk about Dok and Dokbokki?
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, Michelle, did you eat Dokbokki growing up? And if so, was it like at home in Oregon, on trips to Korea, or both?
Yeah, I feel like Dokbokki is like, you know, it's a Korean, largely Korean street food. So growing up in Oregon, like, my mom never really made it at home. I feel like it would be the same. I don't know what like the American equivalent. It'd be like, this is terrible. It'd be like making like funnel cake at home or something. You know, it's like not really like, it's not something that like, I feel like my mom would have made because it's just like a thing that you eat when you're out, you know?
Right.
But I know a lot of people, like there's a lot of instant versions of Dokbokki now. And like,
right,
I have made it a few times and really enjoy it. I really like making it with like the big Dok. Like there's like, you can get them at H Mart, but they're like really long, big. And I'll send you a photo of, I made a really epic Dokbokki once with.
So wait, but do you leave them long when you cook them? You don't like cut them into,
yeah,
sections?
Yeah, they're like fat boys. Like they're like, you know, maybe an inch thick and like maybe 6 inches.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, instead, whoa, of like having a bunch of little ones, like I have like these big ones. The thing is like Dokbokki is like a really big
that
thing
is
in like
really
the
dense.
Yeah, like there's this thing, you guys know about mukbang, right? Like I'm sure that
I do. Yes.
Yeah. So I feel like tteokbokki is like a really big thing in the mukbang universe. And I really love mukbang. And I feel like after watching a lot of those videos, like that and the specific type of like ramen that's really spicy is like a really popular thing to eat on these mukbangs. So I feel like I got into making it after watching it as a young adult, as an adult. But when I was younger, it was like something that you would get like on the street. I feel like I always really enjoyed it. I used to have like a very long chapter in my book that got deleted. The second chapter of my book was like extremely hard for me to get right for a very long time. And it used to be about my Korean first birthday. And thuk is like a major part of your Korean first birthday. And there's all these different types of it. And that's like my, obviously, my like first memory of tteok in general.
Oh, so like what kind of, you know, types of tteok would be served at this is not a tradition that I know anything about.
Yeah, it's at like a lot of celebrations, I feel like at a lot of holidays. So there's like, I used to have all these like descriptions of them. There's like songpyeon, which is like, I'd have to like look up all of these, but like I know songpyeon is one where it's like they look like they're like little lubed up dumplings, and they have like red bean and like sesame inside. And then there's one called mujigae-tteok, which is like a rainbow rice cake that's like kind of, it's almost, it looks like a little like Starbucks cake or something, but it's like very plain. And then my favorite is called yakshik. I don't even know if that's like technically a tteok, but it's like in the family. And it's made from like rice and like I guess corn syrup, and they have like chestnuts and raisins in it. And I also write about that in my book. That was like my favorite one growing up.
Yeah.
So you would pretty much only eat it then when you went back to Korea to visit family there? You didn't tend to have it at home, right?
Tteokbokki, I never really ate that at home. My mom never really made it. But I did have, like when we would go to the Asian grocery store, we would get, they would have tteok. So they would have like different types of like this tteok, and like we would just eat it like on its own, not like the spicy one.
What else do you remember from food-wise from childhood trips to Korea?
My main memory is always like, the first thing that we would always get was like Korean Chinese delivery. As soon as we landed, like it was like pretty much tradition that like my aunt would like call in an order to this like Korean Chinese place. They come in like 10 minutes. I don't know where there must be so many, but there's like, they come so fast. It's basically like the equivalent of like, I don't know, I guess like American Chinese food, but like there's jjajangmyeon, which is like these black bean noodles that are like very savory and just like so good. And tangsuyuk, it's like a deep fried pork, like a sweet and sour kind of pork. And then jjampong is like a seafood noodle soup. So we would usually get like the big three and eat that when I was a kid. I loved jjajangmyeon when I was a kid. And that was like a big thing for me going there. We'd always go to this fancy barbecue restaurant in Seoul called Samwon Garden. I definitely always remember their like kalbi, their like short rib barbecue. And they have like the fanciest, best like side dishes of like pumpkin salad and like all like shredded green onion and like acorn jelly like side. It's like, it's so decadent and delicious. And they have a really good doenjang jjigae, which is like a fermented soybean stew that's like also very savory and has like tofu and different kinds of like you know, potato and zucchini and like different vegetables. Very like hearty stew that accompanies this like short rib barbecue. And yeah, I mean, my aunt, every time like my mom and I would come, she'd be like, make a list of like all the things you want to eat and like all the places you want to go. And so it was like such a huge part of my childhood of like all these things, mostly like my mom really missed getting to eat. And so I was kind of just like along for the ride, like watching her like eat all these things that she grew up eating and like hadn't gotten to have for many years. Like it was a really big thing for her. And I kind of just like reap the benefits of that.
That sounds, I always forget to eat enough before we record these episodes. And
I know. Like yogurt before this.
Matthew and I are like sitting here with dumb smiles on our faces, yeah, like listening to you just describe all this stuff. Like, please keep going, Michelle.
Like, you're gonna blot this drool now.
Do you ever cook tteok at home? I know you mentioned the giant cylinders, but yeah, how do you cook it at home?
Yeah, it's kind of a new thing. I don't make it too often. I make tteokguk a lot, which is like brisket soup with like these kind of coin shaped tteok that you eat on New Year's. And I do really like that. And I usually put mandu, like dumplings, in it. I probably make that the most like in terms of like my tteok consumption. But sometimes I'll make tteokbokki, and I'll do, you make like an anchovy, like dashi, and then you put in like fish cakes and gochujang. And I think that's about it. I really like melting mozzarella cheese on top of it, because that's what the mukbang people do.
What do you think it is about mukbang? Because I love it too, and like I find it so relaxing to watch. Like, do you feel that way too? And if so, like, what do you think it is about it, watching people eat mass quantities of food in like a very, very kind of like ordinary way that is so like heartwarming somehow?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I used to watch it all the time. And I think that especially right now I'm trying to like eat a little healthier, so maybe I haven't watched it very often. But it gets me like, it gets me like just really pumped to like eat something. You know what I mean? Like if I'm like hungry and I'm in bed and I'm like, I don't know what to eat, and then I'll watch someone eat something and they just like look like they're enjoying it so much. It looks so good. It'll like spark some new ideas, and then it'll get me like so excited. Or sometimes I'll like watch a video of something I'm about to eat and like get even more excited to like eat this thing, 'cause like this person is like enjoying it so much.
I've never done that, but that's the best idea I've ever heard.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. Like right before you eat tteokbokki or something, like watching one where like, you know, just like it just looks so goopy and like delicious, and it just gets me going. I've like started eating a lot of things like because of mukbang, I feel like.
What else?
My favorite mukbang is like when someone will eat like a giant fillet of like raw salmon, and they'll like bite into it like a bear. It's like so, it's so sensual. At H Mart they sell like a whole fillet of like sashimi grade salmon, and like it's to like take a giant bite out of like a hunk of salmon, raw salmon, is like, it's just very exciting to me, and it's fun to watch
that
people
eat.
It feels like kind of perverse, you know. I like that. And then another thing is like this brand is like called Samyang Boldak Bokumyeon, I think. And it's like this, they call it the fire noodle challenge. And a lot of times they'll like melt mozzarella or American cheese on top. And it is really spicy. I'm like someone that's like pretty good at spice, and it is like pretty intense level of spice, the two-time one. And I never knew what that was until mukbang. And then afterwards I was like, I have to try this. And like my GI tract was like really suffering for a while.
When you mentioned like tearing into a fillet of salmon like a bear, like years ago I read like a John Thorne food essay. I don't even remember what dish he was talking about, but he said like you eat it with a knife and fork because for the same reason you don't haul a steak up off a plate and just shove it in your mouth. You know, it's just more satisfying to cut it up with a knife and fork. And as soon as I read that, I'm like, now I want to pick a steak up off a plate and shove it in my mouth just to see what that's like.
Totally, totally.
I don't think I have, but now I'm thinking about it again.
Yeah, you should. Now is the time for stuff like that.
You're absolutely right. Like, who's going to know?
Who's going to know? No one's going to know.
Okay, so I watched a video that you did for Pitchfork in which you described yourself.
I also talk about the salmon in that.
Yes.
I'm like raw salmon girl.
we're gonna make that your thing. Like, okay, sure. You've got a great book and like several great albums.
But you're known for your undying love of raw salmon,
eaten out of hand.
But in that video, you described yourself as a garbage mouth, and we are a show that unapologetically loves junk food of all kinds. And so, what is a go-to junk food item for you?
Oh my God. I'm honestly, this is like, I don't want people to know this like deep, shameful secret, but I've been trying to eat healthier and like during the pandemic, because it like offers me a sense of control.
That is a dark secret.
It's a deep, dark secret for someone who is like, I love food. I write about food so much. And like, I have been like such a garbage mouth, but like during the pandemic, I've been wanting to like experiment with healthy eating and dip the toe in. But usually my like real garbage mouth thing that like all my friends know me for is I love Flaming Hot Cheetos with lemon juice, and then I eat it like cereal.
Oh.
It's like fucked up. It must be so bad.
What do you mean you eat it like cereal? You don't put milk on it, do you?
No, I put like a bowl of hot Cheetos I put hot Cheetos into a bowl, and then I'll pour lemon juice over it, so it's like soaking in lemon juice, and then I'll eat it with chopsticks, actually. I learned this trick. My best friend growing up in elementary school was half Mexican, and all her family ate it this way, and I got really into it. It's so good.
Oh, that sounds great.
This is amazing. I can't wait to try
it. I already eat hot Cheetos with chopsticks just to keep them off my keyboard, at least somewhat.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
So now I'm going to add lemon juice for sure.
Yeah. My friend and her family just ate it with their hands, and their entire hands were like just red all the time. And so my one addition is that I eat it with chopsticks.
Oh my God. Awesome. This is delightful. I have so many new ideas.
All right. We don't want to take up too much of your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, the publisher sent us Crying in H Mart. I read it. I loved it. I'm a person who has a lot of trouble dealing with like hard things in life. And I feel like, you know, reading your book made me feel like when I have to go through something like that, like I'm going to use your experience as kind of a guide.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me. Well, thank you guys so much for having
me. Thanks for joining us. This was so much fun.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
That was so fun.
Yes. Okay. So Crying in H Mart, get it where books are sold. Jubilee and two other great albums by Japanese Breakfast, get it where music is sold. What else do we need to say about where to find Michelle and her stuff?
Go pick up a fillet of salmon.
Exactly.
When you show up for Michelle's book tour events, which I'm guessing are out there somewhere if you Google her name, Michelle's Honor or Crying in
H Mart. I will
link
to it in the show notes.
Oh, great.
Show notes.
Okay, perfect. But when you sit down and watch her at one of the book events, you should just take some salmon with you.
Yeah, a lot of salmon.
Not Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Yeah. Or both. All right. So we were talking about dokbokki variations. I did not know about the big boy.
Oh, my God.
And I imagine you like take bites off of it, which sounds so satisfying.
When she first mentioned it, I thought, oh, surely she's going to say that you like cut this into smaller segments.
Yep.
Again, sort of to bring up gnocchi, like you would do with gnocchi, right? But like if you were making gnocchi, but oh my God, I'm fascinated by the idea of this giant phallus of rice cake.
No, it sounds excellent. I have not been to H Mart in too long. Like I'm hoping it's something that can happen pretty soon and I'm going to get one of those and maybe a salmon fillet too.
Fantastic. Anything else that we should say about dok or dokbokki?
Yeah, couple other things. So there is a great video from these great Korean food YouTubers named Aaron and Claire. I love their channel. We're going to link to this video in the episode description. They did a video recently where they make five different dokbokki recipes, including like the original, creamy, fried, and soy sauce, and one other that I can't remember. And like, I want to cook all of them. They look fantastic. And even if you're not planning to cook any of them, like this is the video to watch to like get you slavering for whatever it is you're going to eat, because wow, does it look good.
What about mongchi?
Yeah, so Mongchi, the Korean food blogger and YouTuber, if you're looking for like a good starter recipe to make at home, I think hers can't be beat. Mm-hmm. And we'll link to that also. Oh, and Mongchi has this recipe for chicken buldak, which is it's like a spicy chicken bake that that is topped with mozzarella cheese and has optional, but you should put in rice cakes. And it is, I don't even know like how to describe like what class of food it falls into. Like if you went to Chili's and they served this, you would be like, this is the, this like fits in perfectly and is the best thing I've ever had at Chili's.
Oh my God. I love that this is this is the comparison you reach for.
Yeah, and you serve it like in a cast iron skillet. So make that
it's
also.
Perfect. It's perfect. I was going to say, you know, so we've been talking about Korean rice cakes specifically, but you know, the other place that I think of finding like these sort of disc shaped, like sort of, you know, thin slices of rice cake is in some Chinese cuisines. I mean, I think about having them stir fried at Din Tai Fung.
Yes.
Shanghai rice cakes. Should we mention those? I guess I just did.
Yeah, absolutely. So that I bet they are buying a Korean brand at Din Tai Fung because that's what's most commonly available. And it is exactly the same item. So like in Chinese food, especially in Shanghai, like stir fried with meat and vegetables.
Yum.
They are so good.
They are so good.
I made this a couple weeks ago and I have the rest of the rice cakes in the freezer and I'm going to be making it again very soon.
Fun. Matthew, it seems like it's time for some segments.
It sure seems that way, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, how about some spilled mail?
From listener Rochelle, hello from Saskatchewan, Canada. Hello! I'm responding.
Hello, Saskatchewan, Canada.
Okay. The letter goes on.
No, that was it.
Back in last March, our province fully shut down. Only grocery stores and pharmacies were legally able to be open. It was wild and lasted 9 full weeks before we started slowly reopening businesses. I imagine it was similar where we are in Washington. It was, wasn't it, Matthew?
Yeah. I think things were closed for longer.
I know many of us around here spent that time experimenting or perfecting something in the kitchen. Flour and yeast were almost impossible to find. For me, I finally got it down to a perfect science to make one single loaf of crusty, chewy French bread in my shitty home oven. So my question is this. Did you guys, and Abby too, learn or create or perfect any specific dish or item during lockdown?
Well, I mean, I have a question for listener Rochelle, which is if flour and yeast were almost impossible to find, what did you put in that French bread?
Nice one, Matthew. So I was thinking about this, Matthew, because,
yeah,
you know, there's some kind of boring things that I feel like I've really dialed in during the pandemic, but they're so boring. Like, for instance, I feel like I have perfected roasted broccoli, which I think is one of the most perfect vegetables. Like,
absolutely.
I've got the temperature dialed in, the amount of oil, the length of baking, the way I like cutting it. Anyway, but what I really want to talk about is yakisoba, which, I mean, I should say is my version of yakisoba. I don't know if it is traditional, but I have learned from Matthew how to kind of make a basic yakisoba and have tailored it to my family tastes. So I use bacon, green cabbage, onion, ginger, fresh ginger, scallion, and then the sauce is equal parts mirin and soy sauce with some chili crisp.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Yakisoba is my lockdown superstar.
Guess what? Mine is also an Asian noodle dish, and we talked about it on the show. It is pad thai from two-time Spilled Milk guest Pai Lin's recipe.
Hi, Pai Lin.
It's like I still feel like I get a little better at it each time. Like it was the perfect pandemic dish because it is not easy to make. You know, the first time you make, you'll be like, this is okay. And like, you know, these are the things I need to tweak next time. And it'll be a little better next time. And like, I've finally gotten it to where like, I feel like, oh, this is the noodle texture I'm looking for. This is the right amount of sourness from the tamarind, the right level of heat. It's like as satisfying to make as it is to eat. But also every time I make it, I get a little nervous that I'm going to like really fuck up.
That's really sweet. And then producer Abby, asked producer Abby what her lockdown, you know, perfected dish is. She said the za'atar cacio e pepe from Otto Lengi, and we'll link to the recipe in the show notes. So I'm excited to try that.
And now it's time for cute animals you need to know. This video might be a little long, so feel free to skip around. It's long like the animal itself. That's a hint.
Oh, dear.
So this comes to us from listener Elijah, and it's meerkats. So
oh,
I feel
yes!
like meerkats Meerkats had a real moment, like maybe, I don't know, 10 or 20 years ago. I have no concept of time anymore whatsoever. Maybe the 18th century. But there was like that show Meerkat Manor, and like everybody knew meerkats were like little weasels that like to stand up next to each other. And that's true. They still do that. They haven't stopped doing that. They're skinny little mongooses who will stand on anything. And so we're going to link to this video.
Wait, what's a mongoose?
A mongoose is a kind of weasel that likes to kill snakes.
So it's in the weasel family.
Ricky Tikki Tavi is a mongoose, right?
I don't know.
It's in the weasel family.
Oh my God, Matthew. Like when June was younger and we used to go to the zoo a lot, I always loved to stand in front of the meerkat display because they were just endlessly fascinating.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
God, they are so, there's something about their posture and the general like affect that I attribute to this posture, you know, like
right.
Here I am like anthropomorphizing these little mongooses, but I love them.
Yeah. Also, this just in, a mongoose is not a type of weasel.
Whoops.
But they sure look like a weasel, right?
Oh my God. I'm watching one eat a, oh God. Oh my God. They eat reptiles and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They eat snakes. But the thing is, they'll stand on anything, including a BBC photographer. So there's a point in this video in which the photographer is trying to take pictures of meerkats, and the meerkats are just standing on the photographer.
Oh, my God. I love them so much. And they really do have, they have crazy good posture. It's impressive.
They have great, yeah. We could all learn a lot from, so mongoose self-improvement program. I'm talking about meerkats specifically, not mongooses in general.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
a meerkat self-improvement program, be alert, stand up straight, eat a snake every day.
Oh, yes. I mean, what more could you need?
Stand on a photographer.
There you
go. Consensually.
How about now but wow, Matthew? What are you into
this
week?
Let's do it. I'm into the new Japanese Breakfast single, Be Sweet. But also, I want to tell you about Cecile Liu of Sissy's Art Cafe. It's sissysartcafe.com, who makes beautiful like watercolor stickers based on her own artwork. And there's a lot of food themed ones and a lot of non-food themed ones. They're all great. And you can go to her website, which we'll link to in the show notes, and order stickers like a la carte. But the best way to get her stuff is to sign up for her Patreon and join the monthly sticker club like wife of the show Lori did. And so now every month we get this little envelope full of stickers, and like I always want to open it and see what the stickers are, but I have to wait because they're wife of the show Lori's stickers, and she gets to decide when to open Sissy's sticker envelope.
Her artwork it's like so huggable, like it's
exactly,
so like
yes.
the various food, because it's all food, right? It's like very cute food with faces.
Yeah,
yeah, it's just so like squishable, so cute. I mean, if you could squish a sticker.
Yeah. They used to have puffy stickers. Like, are puffy stickers still a thing?
I don't know.
I loved puffy stickers when I was a kid. I covered, my parents' dashboard with them.
No, I thought puffy stickers were lame. Never liked those, Matthew. I did not like puffy stickers. I wanted my Mrs. Grossman stickers.
What is Mrs. Grossman stickers?
Oh, you don't remember that sticker company, Mrs. Grossman? Like, it came on these, like, it would come on these rolls. So, like, you know, a stationery store, for instance, would have, like, a whole section of Mrs. Grossman stickers. And there would be rolls of white, you know, paper with all the stickers on it. And you could, the paper was perforated, so you could tear off, like, just a certain amount. This isn't making any sense.
I'm looking at these now, and I'm not very impressed.
Oh my God, I love
these. But that's because I was just looking at Cecile Liu's stickers, which are way better.
God. Okay. Well, fine. I'm going to talk about my now, but wow.
Okay.
So maybe I'm like the last person to listen to the Point of Origin podcast, which is...
You're not, because I haven't.
Oh, okay. Well, go listen to it. It's
okay.
Hosted by Stephen Satterfield, who is the founder of Whetstone Magazine. And it's hard to sum up what he's doing in this podcast. Basically, like the magazine, he's exploring culture through food, and he's doing lots of terrific interviews with real people who are defining and preserving global foodways. So He totally pulls it off. I haven't heard another podcast that does what he does as well as he does it. So anyway, they're currently between seasons, but there are a lot of old episodes to listen to. I recently really enjoyed the one that came out last November on food apartheid and like why it's a better term than food desert. So,
I can get that. I know food desert is a really problematic term.
Totally. Anyway, so yeah, that's Point of Origin podcast. So really great stuff.
All right. I think we're done here.
I think we're so done here.
So we're linking to a bunch of stuff this week, and it's all good. We want to thank Michelle Zauner again for being on the show. That was a delight. I hope we can have her back. Abby Circatella is our producer and Zatar Cacho a Pepe maker.
We have a Reddit. It's called Everything Spilled Milk.
Yeah, that's right.
For a second, Reddit. I thought spilled milk everything. And I was like,
let's just spill milk on everything and see what happens. It's going to get very smelly. Reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk.
Fantastic.
It's a great place to chat with other people who listen to the show. You can also send us listener mail, contact@spilledmilkpodcast.com. Send in your topics for the live lightning round live show, topics@spilledmilkpodcast.com.
God, I can't imagine anything else we could possibly need to say today.
I feel like we've given people so many things to listen to, things to read, things to watch, cute animals to know, stickers to stick on themselves this week. Like, I don't know if it's too much.
Self-care exercises to improve your posture. I mean,
right.
We are a one-stop shop.
Yeah, the Meerkat program.
Thank you for listening to Spilled Milk. We're everything.
Okay, we are everything. And we're everything to everyone. We're the podcast that everybody likes.
Oh, that's true. I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Hipster Burton.
Michelle Zauner was our special guest. Thank you, Michelle.
I just literally just said that.
I wasn't listening to you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.